Robbed soldier from World War One who finds life in peacetime unbearably tedious. So we put an ad in the newspaper offering his services to any client who can give him adventure. We're into episode 4, and as Bulldog Drummond follows his enemy to Paris, the ex-officer is asked for help by an American policeman. The reader is Julian Ryan Tutt.
Drummond scrambled unsteadily to his feet.
I've forgotten your damn menagerie, I must confess.
He glanced at the men who had closed in round him.
What's the party for?
A guard of honour, my young friend, said Peterson, to lead you to the house.
Well, don't leave the wretched pots lying about, said Hugh. I dropped him over there.
Drummond paused for a moment at the door of the sitting room. Irma's accustomed place on the sofa was occupied by an unkempt-looking man with a ragged beard. At the end of the table sat Lackington, regarding him with malevolent fury. Along each side were a half a dozen men, some obviously foreigners, some anything from murderers to Sunday school teachers. Peterson's voice came from just behind his shoulder.
Permit me, gentlemen, to introduce to you Captain Drummond, the originator of the little entertainment we have just had.
Hugh bowed.
So, this is the insolent young swine, is it?
The bloodshot eyes of a man with a scarred face turned on him.
Why hasn't he been killed?
He very nearly was last night, said Lackington. But I decided it would be much too easy a death.
It can be remedied tonight.
Peterson took an empty chair next to Lackington.
Sit down, he said.
Hugh bowed and sat. For a moment, there was silence in the room. It was broken by the unkempt man on the sofa.
What this young man has done, I know not, and I care less. In Russia, such trifles do not matter. Did we not kill thousands? Yes, tens of thousands of his kind, before we obtained the great freedom. Are we not going to do the same in this accursed country? What is this wretched man that he should interrupt the great work even for 1 second? Kill him now. Throw him in a corner and let us proceed.
There was a murmur of approval, in which Hugh joined heartily.
Splendid! A magnificent peroration. Am I right, sir, in assuming that you are what is vulgarly known as a Bolshevist?
The man turned his sunken eyes, glowing with the fire of fanaticism, on Drummond.
I am one of those fighting for the freedom of the world, he cried, for the rights of the proletariat. The workers were the bottom dogs in Russia till they killed the rulers. Now they are free. Now they rule.
The growing excitement filled Hugh's mind. Could it be possible that Peterson was organising a deliberate plot to Bolshevise England? If so, where did the Duchess of Lampshire's pearls come in? And what of the American Hiram Potts? Above all, what did Peterson hope to make out of it himself? Peterson regarded him with a faint smile.
A little difficult to understand, isn't it, Captain Drummond? I told you you'd find yourself in deep water. The time has come for you to retire for the night, my young friend.
He stood up, walked over to the bell behind Hugh, and rang it. Then I will say good night, he said.
Is it the same room that I had last time?
No, said Peterson. A different one, specially prepared for you. If you get to the top of the stairs, a man will show you where it is. He opened the door and stood there smiling, and at that moment all the lights went out. Hugh remained motionless. Then someone brushed past him. Like a flash, Hugh's hand shot out and gripped him by the arm. The man wriggled and twisted, but he was powerless as a child, and Hugh found his throat with his other hand. Holding the unknown man in front of him, he reached the foot of the stairs, and there he paused. He suddenly remembered the mysterious thing which had whizzed past his head that other night. He had gone up 5 stairs when it had happened.
"If it's you or me, laddie," said Hugh, "I guess it's got to be you."
With a quick heave, he jerked the man off his feet and lifted him up till his head was above the level of his own. Then, clutching him tight, he commenced to climb. As he reached the 5th step, something hit the neck of the man he was holding with such force that it wrenched him clean out of his arms. Then came a clang beside him, and with a series of ominous thuds, a body rolled down the stairs into the hall below. He heard Lackington's voice.
"You fool! You've killed him! Switch on the light!"
But before the order could be carried out, Hugh had disappeared like a great cat into the darkness of the passage above. He had at the most a minute to get clear. As luck would have it, the first room he darted into was empty, and he flung up the window and peered out. It was a dormer window. Access to the roof was easy. Without an instant's hesitation, he abandoned all thoughts of retreat. When 2 excited men rushed into the room, he was firmly ensconced, with his legs astride the ridge of the window, not a yard from their heads. Securely hidden in the shadow, he watched the subsequent proceedings with genial toleration. In 1/2 minute, the garden was full of hurrying figures. Peterson went over to the Benton house and returned in a few minutes. "He's not over there." The men had gathered together in a group just below where Hugh was sitting.
"Do you mean to say we've lost the young swine again?" said Lackington.
"Not lost," murmured Peterson. "Merely mislaid." It was 1/2 hour before Drummond decided that it was safe to start exploring. The house, he discovered, was built on a peculiar design. The ridge on which he had sat continued at the same height all round the top of the roof. In the middle, the roof sloped down to a flat space from which stuck up a glass structure. With the utmost caution, Hugh lowered himself to the level space around the glass roof. He had no doubt that he was now above the secret room that Phyllis had told him of. He leant forward cautiously and peered in.